Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Chicago-based jazz bassist Timothy Sizer. He opened up about his debut album with the band TS3 called I'm Just Okay. At the start of the pandemic, he decided to collaborate with two of his favorite jazz musicians and close friends, keyboardist Andrew Lawrence and drummer Jonathan Marks, and they wrote this debut solo album. He also called upon one of his favorite all-time bass players, Tim Lefevre, of David Bowie fame, to produce as well as play on the record, and saxophonist Donnie McCaslin, who had a great history with David Bowie, and harmonica master Howard Levy, and some other special guests. They all lent their voices to these songs and made this album powerful. He opened up about this project, COVID life, his life and music overall, and a little bit more. Enjoy.
Tim, hey, thanks for taking a minute out for the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you guys for reaching out. I have a soft spot in my heart for Kansas City. So,
elaborate on it. What's special about Kansas City for you?
Well, my wife is actually from St. Joseph, Missouri.
Okay.
And I have family in North Kansas City area, so I've spent quite a bit of time there comparatively to other Midwest cities. So it's very cool that you guys reached out. I was very excited to see that I'd be doing something in regards to the area because I know I've got some fans out there.
You have a debut album coming out on May 19th, and I think before we get into this trio album, I want to know from you, it's coming out during the tail end of this pandemic and weird things on planet Earth. So what does this overall mean to you?
Overall for me, it's been a long road from the inception of wanting to do this project. The original sort of inspiration came in the months leading up to the shutdown in 2020. I used to have a quintet project. We used to do a lot of touring around the Midwest, original jazz, funk-inspired stuff. And I kind of hung up the band leader role, just sort of taking a break. As a bass player, you can really just kind of sit around and wait for your phone to ring as far as being a sideman full-time. So there was not a huge amount of necessity for me to have my own project, but we had a reunion show. Our piano player from the quintet days moved out of town and then came back, and it just inspired me to kind of want to do it again. And shortly thereafter, I was opening up for the Wayne Krantz Trio with Tim LaFave and Keith Carlock. And I've always been a huge fan of Tim LaFave as a bass player, and also just kind of his whole approach to playing the bass and sounds and all that kind of stuff. So we met at this show. He was really into my playing, which I was super stoked about. And when everything shut down, I was like, well, I'm gonna do something to keep the creative juices flowing and to keep myself inspired to continue to create music in any capacity that I could. And so I started kind of working out this material for the trio, which is two of my best buds, and I knew they'd be down to stay busy during the shutdown as well. And when we started to kind of get enough material together, I reached out to Tim and was just like, hey, man, would you be interested in producing this thing if we move forward with it? And he was on board. So it took a while for us to physically be able to gather in the same space. Also, Tim lives on the West Coast, so just, you know, flights. And, you know, they were surging out there at different times than we were surging out here. But once everything finally came together, we got together in April of 2021, just about a year ago, and laid down the groundwork live. As a trio, and then from there on, it was just a matter of getting all the guests on board, getting the thing mixed and mastered and ready to go. So my target was a year from recording to release, and we're just about there. So it's an accomplishment, really, considering all the moving parts and all of the restrictions and the adversity and challenges that we were all facing. So I feel like it's a true accomplishment. I'm very, very excited about it being released.
And you have quite a lineup on this album. So talk to me a little bit about who's on the album and how you all mix together so well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So obviously, like I said, Tim was kind of the first guest of notoriety to get on board. In addition to producing the record, he also guested as a bassist on a couple tracks. And he also was doing a lot of sonic manipulation as the producer and a lot of sort of the affected stuff, some of the keyboard sounds. He was kind of, his thumbprint is all over it. So, and he recommended that I reach out to Donnie McCaslin because obviously Tim plays in Donnie's regular quartet. So he was like, man, yeah, you should reach out to him. I originally presented one track to Donnie, and he was like, what else you got? And so Tim had recommended possibly him guesting on another track, and I sent that to him, and Donnie immediately was like, this is the one. So he laid down his stuff out in New York remotely and then flew it back in. Fareed Hawk is the guitarist who I've known. He's a Chicago local in addition to being an internationally renowned jazz guitarist. He and I had shared the stage not too long ago. I put together an Alan Holdsworth tribute show shortly after Alan had passed away, and Fareed got in on that. It was a bunch of Chicago guitar players, so he was very happy to lend his talents as well. And then Howard Levy, who obviously as a bass player, an electric bass player, I was a huge fan of Bela Fleck and the Flecktones growing up. So knowing that Howard was local, Howard and I had actually shared the stage a few times back 5-6 years ago when I played with a Brazilian band in town named Accord to Brazil. So Howard's a big fan of the Brazilian music, and so we were able to make acquaintance back then. And so I reached out to him as well and see if he was down, and he was thankfully willing to lend his talents and do what he does on harmonica, which is something that no one else on the planet can do. He's truly unique in that regard.
So what are you ultimately hoping the listener gets from this album?
I'm trying to, this thing, really, I wanted it to be the truest sort of representation of how I feel about the role of the bass in modern jazz music. So it is a bass player led record, and I want that to be apparent because I sort of somewhat greedily want the bass to be the centerpiece of the album. So I definitely want the listeners to embrace that aspect and to try to really kind of clue in on the bass being used in a way that's sometimes traditional, but sometimes very non-traditional. And in addition to that, just overall, sonically and musically, just really trying to push the boundaries a little bit of what the jazz sound in the 2020s can be, and how it doesn't always have to be sort of the more traditionally leaning role of, you know, the piano trio. Essentially, it's a piano trio, just with a lot of sounds and a lot of pedals, effects. Andrew Lawrence plays different keyboards. Jonathan Marks is a very unique drummer, so we're really, as a trio, just kind of really trying to obscure the traditional roles of piano, bass, drums, and really kind of try to make the trio into sort of a newer sounding and hopefully fresh and unique sounding album.
Almost sounds like the mantra of the CTI years, you know?
Yeah.
And you know what I find interesting when I think about what Donnie's trajectory has taken off since the Bowie explosion in his life, so to speak, with mm-hmm. just being under the microscope after that, is Bowie was looking for that jazz sound, and Donnie in turn has taken that flame and expanded it into a more amalgamized sound with lots of different elements that aren't traditional jazz. Do you notice that as well?
Absolutely, yeah. The first time I heard, I've been familiar with Donnie's music for a while, and actually the first time I heard that band play live, it was a pretty unique experience in the sense that I was in New York on tour with another group, and we saw that they were playing that night at the Vanguard, so we went, and Tim LaFave actually was sick that night, so he played the first set, but he played one song in the second set and left, which when I told him about that when we first met, he was like, oh man, you were at that show, I'm sorry, and I was like, no. It was cool because the rest of the night, it was just Donnie, Jason Lindner, and Mark Giuliana, and they just went for it. And it was so cool to watch those guys in an uncomfortable, unexpected situation really just navigate this improvised kind of crazy music with such ease and such professionalism. And I think that kind of speaks to the greater the picture of what those guys are kind of going for, which is to really, you know, just like go for it, go for the sounds, go for the, take the risks, take the chances. And I think that comes through in their music, and hopefully it sort of translates over to what we're doing as well.
So let's dig back into your past. Are you originally from Chicago? Is that where you were born and raised?
Yes. Yeah. I grew up in the suburbs about 20 minutes outside of the city in Arlington Heights. But I moved to Chicago at an early age, probably around 2005. And so in lieu of going to college, like a lot of my peers did, I just sort of hit the ground running and started hitting the sessions and kind of learning the music and the scene firsthand, just kind of being on the streets and trying to do the thing. So I was, I think it probably shaped a lot of my current sound, just being an electric bass player, but trying to participate in a more traditional heavy jazz scene forces you to sort of kind of think outside the box about what you can do with your instrument and how you fit in. So I've always played a very, very wide swath of music. And thankfully Chicago has allowed me that opportunity because this is a very healthy, vibrant local scene here. So I was really lucky to come of musical age in a city where I was able to do a lot of different type of stuff. But my heart has always sort of been in the improvised jazz, you know. I know fusion sort of has a dirty connotation sometimes, but that's really kind of a lot of what I grew up listening to. And so that's where my focus has always been musically, especially as a composer and as someone who writes music in addition to playing the bass.
So what was the first live show you saw, a live jazz show that really blew you away?
I remember seeing a trio when I was very young, like early high school years. My dad is a huge jazz fan, so I had a lot of really just iconic jazz playing in the house growing up. He's not a musician, but he just has impeccable taste in music. So he would take me to see like local groups here and there when they were playing out in the suburbs. But I remember consciously one of the first experiences of really being like humbled. I was a senior in high school and I was starting to garner a lot of attention and get some awards for outstanding bass playing. And I remember being at the New Trier High School Jazz Festival, and Dave Weckl was there with the Buddy Rich Big Band, but it was Dave Weckl's rhythm section, and Tommy Kennedy was on bass. And I remember thinking I was hot, you know, stuff on the scene, and I remember listening to Tommy Kennedy play that concert and just being like, oh, man, I got a lot of work to do. So he kind of really blew my mind at a young age. And like I said, I was a huge Victor Wooten and Bela Fleck and the Flecktones fan, so I remember seeing them a few times in my late high school, early college age days, and really just being blown away by what those guys could do as well. The other group that I remember seeing multiple times really making an impression on me was the Dave Holland Quintet. Seeing them both with Billy Kilson and following when he left the band with the Nate Smith years, and just watching those guys interact on stage and improvise and play odd meters and odd rhythmic stuff just really blew my mind at a young age as well.
Tell me a little bit about what it is about being a professional musician that you like the most. What do you look forward to the most? What's the best part of this process for you?
You know, there's a lot of good and bad that goes with it, especially nowadays. It's definitely been getting a little bit trickier to survive in recent years and kind of make it all work. But really, the reason that I think a lot of people do it is just the ability to share a very intimate experience with people on stage, especially when you're talking about improvising and sort of creating something that is artistically unique to the moment. You know, one thing with the trio, we've been playing live quite a bit, and we'll play the same songs, but they go to different places, you know, regularly, just based on the mood in the room and the mood of the players. So really, I think just getting to share that being in the now experience with people and being invested in the moment and trying to maximize the artistry that you can come up with in those moments. That's that, and the social aspect of it too. I love the ability to socialize with other artists and just kind of, that was something I think I took for granted, and then being locked away from people for so long. That was really one of the things that I missed the most, was just the hang, just getting to be on the gig with your friends and people. And when the energy's right, it's the best way to make money as far as I'm concerned.
So I guess that's my next question. You know, over this time of quarantine and lockdown and no live shows, we all had to kind of look within and, you know, realize things. What did you realize about yourself that maybe you didn't realize before that will make you a stronger organism, a musician, as you get out and promote this debut album?
Well, I mean, one of the things that really truly blew my mind was when all of the clubs closed, we had to look for different ways to bring the music to people. So one thing that had started happening was a younger piano player that I know that had moved to Chicago, he started putting on concerts on his porch. He was playing out there every day. So he was Monday through Sunday, he would be playing, he'd have like a 5 p.m. set. He reached out to me early on and was like, I'm thinking, originally it was just, he was just doing duo said, I'm thinking about doing more band stuff on the weekend. So we started playing on his porch on the weekends, and all these people were showing up, and all these people were coming up to us and just being like, this is so great. Thank you guys so much for doing this. We missed music so much. So we started actually playing on Jonathan, my drummer's porch, and his neighbors would come out and set up chairs and just sit, and we're out there playing this weird, sort of difficult, kind of crazy music, and people just loved it. And just the direct connection of we are the musicians, you are the audience, and taking away the middlemen of like booking guys and promoters and clubs and worrying about turnout and all that, it kind of brought it back to more of a raw, sort of like reconnecting with the early days of when you started playing and you were in a band and all you wanted to do was just play a show. It didn't matter where, didn't matter how many people were there. Literally the only thing you wanted to do was get out and play your music for other people. So to sort of reconnect with that energy, it was really unique, and I think it was part of the reason why I was so inspired to start this project and to keep this project going, was just the inspiration of people being affected by the music directly and getting past the sort of old notion of you got to play covers, you got to play Mustang Sally, you got to play stuff that people know for people to react to the music. We're out there playing original kind of hard jazz fusion stuff, and people from all over the spectrum of listeners and music lovers were reacting to it positively. So that was a really great motivation for me to keep sort of forging down the path despite all of the obstacles that we were presented with the last, you know, 2 years or so.
I guess very simply put, you know, what you do is definitely, you know, jazz, and, you know, there's something about it that hooks all of us. Why do you love jazz?
I love composed music. I love rock music. I love playing functionally as a bass player in a traditional setting. But to me, one of the major appeals of jazz has always been it allows me as a rhythm section player to really kind of broaden the role of my instrument and really kind of push the boundaries of what the actual instrument can do. So I think when I started this trio, one of the things that was very important to me was for us to all sort of share roles musically. So not one person is not strictly a harmonic instrument. One person is not strictly a lead instrument. One person is not strictly a rhythmic instrument. We're all sort of sharing the role. Sometimes I'll take over and play melodies and leads, and Andrew will switch over to playing left-hand bass on his Moog. And so that way I can take a solo as a bass player and function more like a guitarist and not have the bottom drop out. Because that was always one of the things as a bass player that would drive me nuts, especially in more traditional jazz settings, is it's time for the bass solo, everybody stops playing. So it's cool that that presents a unique opportunity as a musician to grab the audience because there's a dramatic textural change. But also there's times when I want that energy, I want that churning undercurrent of rhythmic activity to play off of. So I think just the ability to sort of swap roles, I can play chords under Andrew's solo so he doesn't have to worry about playing the harmony and can just function as a strict lead player. You know, that kind of stuff really intrigued me. And so that's one of the things about jazz and about this trio in particular, is that we can all really kind of take on different roles and switch off at any given time. And that presents a really unique opportunity for me to push the boundaries of my instrument and what it can do in a jazz setting.
So everyone has a perception or an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. You have a perception of you. Who do you think you are?
I think I'm a bass junkie, a self-proclaimed bass fanatic. In addition, I'm not a multi-instrumentalist. I've always just been very, very intrigued with the electric bass and what it can do. So I've certainly taken that to the max. I build bass guitars, which was a fun development that started within the last 10 years. I repair them. I play them. I'm a gear junkie. I love pedals. I love researching different gear. And I just would hope that I can present myself as someone who's dedicated to my art and dedicated to this instrument. And hopefully that's something that is translated with this record, is that I'm a bass player, but I also am a musician's musician. So hopefully it's not something where it's only bass players that like it. Hopefully it's something that jazz fans from across the spectrum can enjoy, regardless of the instrumentation and the sound of it.
Perfect. Hey, Tim, man, thank you for opening up. Thanks for taking a minute out. Good luck with the debut and the return to the live stage.
Thank you so much, and I hope to see you guys in Kansas City soon for a local show so I can get some of the family out there to enjoy and support.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest cats in Chicago, Kansas City, and spots all over the world giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Timothy for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com, and for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.